So now, if my colleagues are ready, we'll proceed to the next case involving the town of Reddington Beach. Is Mr. Eschenfelder with us?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. We'll be happy to hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honors. May I please the court, Robert Eschenfelder, representing the town of Reddington Beach. In this particular case, I want to start with the lower court's voiding of the town's customary use ordinance pursuant to its interpretation of Florida Statute 163.035. As my briefing papers indicated, the federal courts, whenever they're interpreting a Florida law, will use Florida's statutory interpretation rules, and which include that the court has to give effect to all the words of a particular statute. It can't read out of a statute any of the particular words. So the plaintiffs in this case, as to this argument, rely on subsection 2 of the statute, which states that a customary use ordinance that is adopted will be required to be based upon a judicial declaration. The town relies on subsection 4 of the statute, which allows customary use to be raised by an affirmative defense for pre-July 1st, 2018 ordinances. And apparently the lower court just simply agreed with the argument of plaintiffs in this matter that the statute, the effect of the statute is that when it came into effect on July 1, 2018, simply wiped out any and all customary use ordinances that hadn't been adopted pursuant to the complex judicial process that the new statute promulgated. But as I argue in the brief, Your Honors, that ruling and that theory completely reads out the affirmative defense that the legislature clearly provided municipalities and counties in Florida under subsection 4 of the statute.
How do you think that works? Can you just walk me through that? So subsection 4 says, appears to say if the ordinance is adopted before July 1, 2018, as this one was, then you're good to go. But yet the earlier part of the statute says they can't remain in effect or cannot adopt or keep in effect. How do you work through that?
I certainly admit, the town certainly admits that this statute is poorly drafted. And it wouldn't be the first poorly drafted statute that we've ever dealt with, but we have to apply the rules of construction, and we have to give effect to sub four. And so, as I argued in my brief, the best way to do that is that one way of gaining a judicial declaration is by having the ability to raise the affirmative defense provided for in subsection 4. So how it would work is that obviously, everyone who hadn't adopted a customary use ordinance as of July 1st, 2018, you just have to do that process that's included in the statute, where you sue each and every parcel owner and so forth in state court. For our category of ordinance, the between 2016 and 2018 ordinance, it seems very clear to me that you wait for a challenge, as what occurred in this case. And once a challenge comes in a court, be it a state court or a federal court, you have the opportunity to raise customary use as an affirmative defense, and you would gain your judicial declaration in that way. And so
is there a mechanism to seek a judicial declaration for this type of thing under Florida law? Like could a municipality go a declaratory judgment that they have the appropriate customary use?
Well, I think that the statute for folks that for municipalities and counties that didn't have customary use adopted by July 1st of 2018, the process that the legislature promulgated in the statute is now the exclusive method which is effectively like a declaratory judgment action, but has a lot more process. For the pre-July 1st, 2018 ordinances, in theory, a government could do that. But as I cited in my brief, laws of Florida and ordinances of Florida's municipalities and counties carry a presumption of constitutionality. And so there is no Florida case law and no Florida statute before the adoption of 163.035, which would have caused the town to file a declaratory judgment action. The town adopted a legislative ordinance recognizing the applicability of customary use to the dry sand beaches in town. And that ordinance carries a presumption of constitutionality. So there would be no need before the statute is adopted for the town to pursue a declaratory judgment. So the answer, Judge Brand, is that yes, in theory, the town could have, but there would have been no purpose to do so.
So the district court also went on and said that even if you could raise this affirmative defense, that the evidence that you submitted in support of your customary use argument was insufficient to survive summary judgment. Could you address that, whether you think that you've sufficiently put enough evidence in to establish customary use?
Thank you, Your Honor. And yes, that is the second point on our appeal. The court and the plaintiffs in this case went a great deal of effort to argue that the town is not a tourist mecca. Tourists don't come here. But the town's history expert that it retained deduced in his report and the additional testimony and depositions of the folks who lived in the town for many decades brought forth several facts. First of all, there is tourism in the town. There are vacation rentals in the town. The town has one sort of a hotel, if you will. It's a condo that's been converted, basically. But by and far and away, this ordinance was adopted not to foster tourists from Canada or any place such as that, but because residents of the town who don't own beachfront property, part of why they bought into the town was because they understood that when, you know, Grandma Bessie comes from Michigan or whatever, that we can bring her out to the beach and that we can do the traditional things that the ordinance provides for on the beach. And we had—
The district court said with respect to the expert that the expert was really talking about the pre-tidewater line. So I think there's no dispute that there's public access to high tide mark. And what we're talking about is high tide mark up to sort of the seawall. The district court said that the expert was only talking about the high tide line. And so he said that we don't care what that expert says about that because that's not in dispute. What do you say about that?
That passage of the expert's deposition, he wasn't, I don't think he was really understanding what he was being asked. And so I think he just repeated his understanding of what is reserved to the public in trust forever versus what is not. But the record clearly contains testimony from the mayor and from several other of the commissioners that yes, indeed, we have used the dry sand beach for the things that are put forward in the ordinance. So we understand that there are things that can occur in the wet sand. That's not really at issue in this case. The part of the problem is that the court didn't take into account the expert's assessment of the beaches outside of the actual boundaries of the town, and we believe that is too narrow of a reading. The state appellate court Trey Panier case said that it is impossible to precisely define the areas to be studied in terms of gaining proof of customary use. And in that case, in fact, noted that studying the entire coast of a Florida county could be used as evidence. And so the town kind of feels that the court just dismissed out of hand all of the evidence that was presented because it wasn't focused just on the beach and what is now current day Reddington Beach. And you all have—
I don't want to interrupt you, but I know you're running out of time. Didn't Trey Panier also say that the analysis was intensely local? It seems that case, which is Florida law, which we need to follow, does set out a pretty concrete way to determine whether there's enough evidence of customary use.
Well, it absolutely, it's intensely local, but the court also said in that same opinion that it's impossible to precisely define the area studied. And I think that the judge, the lower court, simply said, okay, this is the modern day boundaries of Reddington Beach Municipality. And it's going to ignore Reddington Shores, North Reddington Beach, Madeira Beach, all of which directly surround Reddington Beach within a couple miles. And that just artificially narrows the town's ability to establish customary use. That you have evidence in the record where even the plaintiffs, a couple of plaintiffs admit, yeah, I walk from my house to the restaurant in the town, you know, behind me, which is one of the things in the ordinance that's allowed. I'm out of time.
I actually have a question for you that I couldn't seem to work in. So beaches are pretty important in Florida, and your constitution, you know, addresses the public right of access to beaches. Against odds, you have not one Florida judge on this panel. What would you think about certifying this question to the Florida Supreme Court?
Your Honor, thank you for that question. And so here's the issue. And this is really critical, and I wish we would have had more time to argue because there's a lot of points.
We'll give you your time on rebuttal. So.
But the facial taking ruling is really the biggest critical thing here that the lower court did that we strongly disagree with. And the lower court did that based on the federal constitutional takings clause. As you know, Florida relies on federal takings law. And so what you'd be certifying to the Supreme Court might be the first count, which is the interpretation of the Florida statute, which arguably the lower court should have not gotten in the middle of, because no Florida courts ever interpreted it. And yet the court went ahead and tried to figure out what it means. But the court found that the adoption of this ordinance, the moment it became effective, constituted a facial taking of the property. And that simply cannot square with all the Florida court rulings. You've got the Tonorama case, which in 1974, the Florida Supreme Court first recognized customary use. And the Trepanier case, which clearly ruled, and I cite the passage in my briefs, Your Honor, that if customary use is established, then that will not result in a taking. And as we know, takings is based upon Florida or the state's property law. It's not a federal issue. It's what does each state provide for is your personal property. And so I'm not sure what you would certify to the Florida.
So to go back to, let me address that, because I had the same question. I mean, we only get to the federal constitutional question if the ordinance is effective, right? If the ordinance is ineffective, then there is no federal constitutional question because the ordinance is ineffective and you haven't taken anything. You haven't arguably taken anything. You passed an invalid ordinance. Isn't that right?
Sure. Well, sure.
To get to the federal constitutional question, we'd have to reverse the district court first on the state law question, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So I think that's the issue that Judge Martin was asking about. Should we potentially certify the state law question to the Florida Supreme Court so we can decide perhaps this case on a state law issue instead of a federal law issue? What do you think about that?
I think ultimately the Florida Supreme Court would be the arbiter of what that statute means. And certainly if the court agrees with our position, then the ball would be back in your court, to coin a phrase, to then have to parse the federal constitutional ruling that the judge made.
Thank you. We'll be happy to hear from Mr. Weber now.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Timothy Weber, and I'm here on behalf of the Appalese property owners in this case. The right to exclude others from private property is one of the fundamental rights in the bundle of sticks. And that right was taken by the town when they passed an ordinance declaring that the property owners no longer had that right down to the point of mean high water on their land. And that was the taking, just like in Kaiser Aetna from the United States Supreme Court, taking away the right to exclude is really the fundamental characteristic of private property. And so that is precisely why when the town publicly enacts an ordinance that says the public has a right to this person's land and this person is prohibited from taking any action to interfere with that right, that is per se a taking. And so in this
case, is it your position that, you know, people other than the owners have never used the dry sand beaches in Reddington?
So the thing about Reddington Beach that was unique, which came out in this case, is it's always been a residential town.
No, in but fact, I understand that. But I mean, you're not saying that nobody's ever used the dry sand beach other than the beachfront property owners, are you?
No, Your Honor, the town has purchased a beachfront lot, which they opened to the residents, which is right next to the Moore's home. And so the town went out, used money, bought a lot just like my clients, and opened it up to the residents of the town. In addition, there are lateral accesses that allow people to get out to the foreshore that are in reserved to the owners of the platted subdivisions, including but not limited to people who are in those subdivisions. The town says those are town accesses, but they're reserved to the residents of the owners of homes in the plat. But those are only lateral accesses to the foreshore. And so the town, like my clients, went out and purchased a lot on the water, and they allowed the public to use that. Notably, you have to be a resident and get a resident parking pass from the town to use that beach park. And so, yes, are there people that go out to the beach in Reddington Beach? The answer is yes. And in fact, when they were asked to produce what evidence they had concerning the use of the dry sand area in Reddington Beach generally, they produced pictures of people at Beach Park, and in one limited instance of the house or the property immediately north of Beach Park. But those pictures, the town representative admitted, the owner of that house was in the picture, strongly suggesting a permissive occupation.
Let me ask you about that, because I will say, I mean, there, to me, the district court summary judgment decision here reads like fact findings after a bench trial. And the argument that you just made sort of reads like fact findings after a bench trial. I mean, we've got an expert saying as a historical matter, the public had access to these areas. We've got pictures, which may not be sort of irrefutable proof that they're public on these areas, but you could reasonably infer that there was public access to these areas. And we've got some old residents of the town saying that they've always used these areas. Isn't that enough to just get past the summary judgment hurdle and have a bench trial on the issue of customary use? Why is it not?
Well, I would simply say, number one, the town's not even claiming material issues of fact preclude summary judgment in this case. I would say this, we need to talk about what you mean when you say these areas, because Dr. Kanesh was very clear that the public was using the foreshore, which we know under our state constitution is dedicated to public use and in trust for the people to use. So the fact that they present evidence of people walking up and down the foreshore, swimming in the Gulf of Mexico, fishing from the foreshore is no evidence of a ancient, historical, uninterrupted, not contrary to law, longstanding use of the private upland property, which is the only property that's an issue in this case. In fact,
what kind of evidence, and you may be right about that, I just like, what kind of evidence would a town produce if not sort of old people talking about using the land, pictures of people in sort of the general areas, and a historian talking about like the general area and how it's used? Like, how could a town even do this?
Well, I would note that the cases where it has been found, particularly over in Volusia County, there was literally a path where the vehicles drove and they could document exactly where the vehicular traffic repeatedly was allowed to occur in that local area. So when we're talking about a local custom, number one, the law is clear. You can't have a custom that runs in favor of the public at large, or otherwise that's just the common law. Number two, in the cases in Tonarama, there was a specific tourist attraction, the pier out of Daytona, where there was a needle and there was a place where tourists and the public gathered there. It was kind of like the Boston Commons. It was a specific place everybody in the community knew. And the Trepanier Court, cited by Judge Moody, was that if there's such a ubiquitous use of a parcel for a specific purpose by a specific group of people, then you would be able to produce some evidence of it. And here the town was asked repeatedly, what evidence do you have? In fact, the week they passed the ordinance, I made a public records request, send me all the evidence you had, and we received 10 photographs, mostly of people on the town's land, Beach Park. And so none of the evidence they produced would go to this level of establishing this long time historical use, time immemorial of the upland. And to put a finer point on it, their own expert acknowledged that Florida is a mean high water state, has been since the commencement of the state. When Spain ceded Florida to the United States, it was mean high water. When it was a territory, it was mean high water. When it became a state, it was mean high water. We enshrine that in our Constitution. And we also enshrine in our Constitution, one of the primary things of our state Constitution is public property rights, Article 1, Section 2. And so we give primacy to private property rights in the state. And there are recording statutes that document how people establish and put the public on notice of their interest in land. And so
I've got a question about your takings claim. What are your clients seeking in terms of relief besides the invalidation of the ordinance and the inability going forward of the public to be on their land?
Yes, yeah, so what the district court did, which is what we sought, was saying, the statute was invalid because the town kept it in effect after July 1st of 18. What he found was that between the date of the passage of the ordinance, June 6th of 18, and the date he invalidated it, there was a temporary taking. But obviously, once he invalidated the ordinance, it no longer had operation, so the taking was not continuous. So the taking that occurred in this case was temporary. It was during a period of time where law enforcement was told not to enforce trespassing laws, when the town was telling people, come to these people's land. Now that that's been invalidated, that ordinance no longer operates as a taking. And so the
right,
damages—
but are you seeking, what damages are you seeking for the time period when the ordinance was in effect?
Yes, yeah, so after the district judge found this temporary taking, the parties stipulated to, I believe, $10,000 per family as the temporary takings damages to avoid the expense of a trial on damages so we could get to the liability issue here. So it was a very small award for the 2 years, essentially, that the town had invited and announced that this was public land. And so,
can I ask you, you know, about this interpretation of subsection 4 of the ordinance? I mean, does your interpretation of the ordinance give any meaning to the words, you know, does not deprive a government entity from raising customary use as an affirmative defense in any proceeding challenging an order, ordinance or rule adopted before July 1, 2018?
Absolutely, it does. So here's how we believe the statute should be harmonized and is intended to operate. The legislature's primary goal in this statute was to give due process to property owners so that municipal governments and counties could not just declare a right of people on their land. That's the whole purpose of the statute. It's about due process. And so what they did was they said, you can't keep one in effect unless you have a judicial declaration in your hand showing that you gave the property owner due process. And they knew they would be invalidating ordinances between 2016 and 2018. And because they knew they were invalidating ordinances.
How do you know that?
Well, because that's where Section 4 comes in. They wanted to make sure that those governments could still defend takings liability on the basis that there was customary use in fact. And that's what we believe Section 4 preserves the affirmative defense for governments that had adopted an ordinance during that period of time that would be invalidated by the keeping in effect language. They wanted to preserve to those governments an affirmative defense to damages liability.
It doesn't say that, does it? It says in any proceeding. Well, it doesn't limit it to damages proceedings or takings proceedings.
Correct. So there was a progress, of course, obviously, in the legislative process, but initially the legislation was just Section 2. And then Section 4 is added precisely because there was a raging debate going on in Walton County about an ordinance that county had adopted after 2016. In fact, one might argue this is what this legislation was written for. So to make sure that if a municipality had adopted one during this period and it was going to be invalidated as of July 1st of 18, they did not want governments being automatically subjected to takings liability.
I mean, so basically you're talking intent of the legislators in passing this.
I think that's the logical way to harmonize the two provisions, because otherwise the town would have you read out the keep in effect language completely.
Can I follow up on Judge Brasher's observation about, you know, this district court order kind of sounding like findings of fact? I mean, one of the things that strikes me about this is, you know, some of your clients, you know, are unhappy about things that it went on before the ordinance was passed. I mean, and I'm talking about Ms. Moore. I mean, she said that, you know, certain trespassing within the 15-foot buffer identified in the ordinance went on, you know, before the ordinance was ever passed. And she just said, well, the ordinance invites more people to do that, even though the ordinance says you can't do that. So, I mean, it seems like the district court waded in to a pretty fact-intensive inquiry, you know, on summary judgment.
I don't think he did, because he looked at the elements of customary use. And this is not something where you can just say, well, somebody anecdotally said when they were a kid, they rode their bike on the beach. First off, you don't ride your bike in the thick sand upland. You ride your bike on the firm sand on the shore. So each piece of evidence that the town advanced forward was either so loose or so unexplained, or at best, I mean, their own expert said, I have no information of anybody using property above mean high water in Reddington Beach.
In that same vein, I mean, where in the record, I think you've taken the position that traffic increased after the ordinance was passed. I mean, where is that in the record? I mean, and you know, is it quantified, or you know, how much it increased?
Yeah, I would say it's not quantified, but I really think that really goes more to the issue of damages. What the district court found was when you allow a physical occupation of another's land, that's a per se taking. And so we're not getting into the sort of investment-backed expectations realm or anything like that. You literally authorized an occupation of these folks' lands. And I would just note that the town corporate representative was asked, what evidence do you have on customary use? Nothing. And the same thing with the Wendy Fields First Amendment retaliation, nothing. And that's what their expert said, nothing. And the fact that the mayor remembers riding a bike on a beach, he also testified he worked at the Tides Bath Club, which was private, and it was my job to exclude other people from the cabanas and the chairs. And so this is, and from our perspective, a land grab. The district court correctly recognized that because Florida has a law that sets the boundary at mean high water. Thank you very much.
That was a great wrap up, but if I could ask another question too, because you mentioned the Windy Fields issue. I guess how applying the balancing test that the Supreme Court said we have to apply to a speech claim like this, how is it not justifiable for the government to say, look, you're on a board that deals with zoning and you are disputing like a huge land grab issue from the town. We don't want you on that zoning board anymore because you're basically contesting the propriety of one of our ordinances. I mean, it just seems to me like if you apply the Pickering balancing test, you would say that makes sense, that the government has an interest there in getting someone off a zoning related board because she's doing that. What do you say about that?
I think under Pickering, that would be a very slippery slope to say that a person who is clearly speaking about a private matter is private to them, their property, which is a matter of public concern in the town, that they would be disqualified from sitting in those office positions, from being an employee. I think that's a terribly slippery slope under the First Amendment to say, because otherwise we could justify.
Is it that they would be disqualified from sitting in that office, or really the point is that they would be disqualified from making zoning decisions that would directly benefit themselves?
So the Board of Adjustment grants variances in the town, and this customary use issue has nothing to do with variances or the criteria for variances to apply on that board, and no one on that board could impact or affect anything having to do with this customary use. She volunteers to decide whether or not her neighbors and people in the community are entitled to get a variance from hardships in the town's code. And unlike the McKinley case relied on by the town, her matters of speech on public concern had no relationship to her office. They were not done at the commission meetings or done in a manner to disrupt any function of government that she was involved in. And if we allow towns to retaliate against citizens for merely questioning them, I think we're in a very dangerous space.
Well, here's the issue that I have, and I think you're right about that to a certain extent, but this is not a person who's like a firefighter or a police officer or, you know, just someone who works for the town who's suing the town. This is someone who's on the zoning board suing the town over a zoning ordinance. It strikes me as it's kind of similar to like a town police chief suing the town over some kind of policing policy or some kind of policy that affects the police. I just kind of focus up on that. I mean, isn't she in the position of making policy about land use for the town?
So the Board of Adjustments has no authority over zoning. They just grant exceptions to provisions of the zoning code, which are a whole separate set of criteria. So there's a 5 criteria to get a variance. And so it's not setting the policy of how we're zoning in the town or what we're allowing to occur on private property. To me, they're totally disconnected issues, and she never connected them, and there was no evidence that they were ever connected to her public service. And I think that's undisputed. In fact, someone just says, well, how can you allow her to be on the board when she's filed the lawsuit? And that was literally the justification the town offered, was somebody complained to that, which is essentially giving somebody at the grocery store a heckler's veto over Wendy Fields' speech.
Well, one final question. What do you think about certifying the state law issue to the Florida Supreme Court?
So I disagree that we need to decide whether the ordinance is valid to determine the Fifth Amendment issue, precisely because Judge Moody said, I'm invalidating the ordinance and I'm only finding the taking during this limited 2-year period here. So we're not talking about a permanent taking case here. The court, it's up to your discretion as to whether or not to certify what 163.035 means. I understand that it's a fairly new statute, but I would simply suggest that Judge Moody was able to read it and harmonize it. I think this court can read it and harmonize it. Only the town's version allows you to take keep in effect completely out of the statute. And so to give effect to both, you can't keep the ordinance past July 1st of 18, but we're going to give you a defense for the fact that you ever had one. And that's a simple way to harmonize the two provisions.
Mr. Eschenfelder?
Your Honors, I want to talk about, first of all, we really need to understand this is not a land grab. The application of customary use is already in place. Look at the Tonorama decision. The court merely recognized that which was already burdening the land that was owned in that case. The town's ordinance merely recognizes the same thing. If you read the ordinance, it creates no new obligation on the part of anyone. The opposing counsel says that the town's ordinance invited people and compelled people to come. No, it didn't. What it responded to is the fact that these newer folks that have a lot of wealth who have purchased these beachfront properties are now going into their backyards and saying, get off my property. And the old community in the town who live inland and who are doing what they've always done are coming to the town commissioners and saying, wait a minute, what is going on here? We've always been able to do this. If you look at the ordinance, it says you can traverse the beach, sit on the sand, use a beach umbrella of less than 7 feet, sunbathe, picnic, fish, or swim. And so all of this stuff that they're complaining about with respect to public urination, damage of property, holding weddings, the ordinance doesn't create any of that. It has nothing to do with that. And as several of you pointed out, that kind of stuff was occurring beforehand. So really, truly, this was the fact that the town recognized customary use, if anything, the ordinance creates the 15-foot buffer from the toe of the dune, which actually gives the homeowners more of a break from whatever impact of folks using it than they had before, because theoretically they could go all the way up to the toe of the dune. So then I want to touch briefly on the ancient issue. The plaintiffs would have you go all the way back to British kings to try to figure out how this beach was used. But as the Trepanier report ruled in its note 22, ancient use is an awkward concept in a new world society. And when you look at the only case that I can find in Florida that really talked about the time period, it's the Tonorama case. In the Tonorama case, the Court of Appeals opinion, which of course is part of the record, said that it examined back 20 years. It only looked at 20 years of the record to take a look. Our expert looked at way farther back than 20 years. I want to, in the 2 minutes that I have left, because I didn't get the opportunity, to talk briefly about the First Amendment issue. And so again, in this particular case, if you look at the exchange that occurred at the town commission meeting, this began to be discussed because commissioners had been approached by folks in the town at the grocery store saying, you know, what's up with Ms. Fields? Ms. Fields participated in the discussion of that meeting. Ms. Fields offered, look, if y'all feel that, you know, I'm not really welcome anymore, I will be perfectly fine with resigning. The commission polled themselves and said, yeah, we really think that you should. And she accepted that. It was only after she went back and phoned her attorney and her attorney said, wait a minute, don't do that because I got a First Amendment retaliation claim I can add, that she then says, I want to kind of undo my resignation. But so our first point is that really, if you look at the 11th Amendment case law and the Florida case law on public official recognitions being effective immediately upon submission, resigned. She willingly left her seat. But even if she didn't,
is that a legal question that we would look at, or would we have to overturn a factual decision made by the district court on that?
Well, I think that the appellate courts before have looked at, in the employment law context, have looked at what an employee does and says at a meeting with his or her employer, and the words that they say and have legally concluded that those words constitute a resignation. So I believe that this court can, based upon the record, including Ms. Field's own admissions at deposition, conclude that she resigned. But even if she didn't resign, as Judge Brasher was indicating, this isn't a case of a lower mid-level public employee where the dynamic is probably going to be different under Pickering. It is looking at a public official. And you know, how is it that the Dade County gets to, in McKinley versus Kaplan case, that is this court's case, how is it that they can take a member of their film board who criticized a decision that the county commission made on funding a music festival, which had nothing to do with the film board's jurisdiction in Dade County? How can they remove that person because she's out there criticizing that decision because of Cuba politics, when in this case, the town commissioners are hearing concerns about Ms. Fields on a board of adjustment where the record confirms board of adjustment votes are final. They are not appealable to the county, to the city commission, only on certiorari in the Court of Appeals. And so therefore, her vote means even more. Thank you, Your Honors. I'm out of time.
Thank you. We have your case.